I've actually done quite a bit of LATAM, and actually you have too, I guess. Although I have to say, you know, I've actually flown a LATAM on like 3 mileage runs to Easter Island. So I've seen the inside of a LATAM 787 and 767 quite a few times. And this was definitely their oldest product. And it looked every bit as old as it was. In fact, it looked older than it was. It looked like it was from like the 1970s somehow, even though it was in a Dreamliner.
It was well used. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we venture into an expedition into the unknown, to altitudes not prior visited, to salt caves and salt mines never before known of. Tom, welcome to this experience. As always, my friend, how are you?
Doing well. I'm safely back from deepest, darkest Colombia.
And highest, thinnest air Colombia.
Well, okay, maybe that's more accurate.
I mean, I think it was both. I mean, it was almost like a tale of two cities, but we're probably jumping ahead. But I'm just going to say it anyway. It was the tale of two cities. We went all the way up to Montserrat. That was what, like another 1,000 feet up?
Yep. And we added even more altitude to what was already a little high.
Yeah. And then we went like 800, 900 feet down into an old salt cave, salt mine.
You make a good point. You know, I feel like we have never had such a diversity of altitude in one city before.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty interesting, but we'll leave that little lead in there and kind of start at the beginning, I suppose.
I think we've mentioned in a previous episodes, we never let a holiday go to waste, do we?
Oh gosh, no holiday left behind. That's our motto.
I think that is our motto. And clearly we made sure that we followed our motto here this past Columbus Day, didn't we?
And I think almost to a fault, I had tweeted how many different itineraries that this trip took or went through, and we never stopped tweaking.
No, we didn't. I think even for us, this is a little high, don't you think?
Yes, this was definitely, I think, a high point for the duration trip and the number of canceled itineraries.
I think Aeroplan really loves us. You know, they're like, ah, yes, winning. They're like, these guys are spending lots of money on change fees.
Yeah, and so we're diving right into it without really getting some of the facts. I think we're...
Oh, are we going too far? Well, you know, I'm just focusing on... Hey, you brought up the number of itineraries we had. You know, it was, eight? Is that the right number of PNRs that were associated with this trip?
I thought it was 9.
Oh, I think we tweeted out 8, and then I guess we booked another one, right?
I think it was that. Yeah, so let's kind of give that bottom line up front, right? So we wanted to leverage Columbus Day weekend, or Columbus Day, the holiday. We happened to have that following Friday off, and so our thinking was let's just do a fun trip that we can leverage the time off. This was a guy's trip. Wife and daughter stayed home. And we had a unique thing where, what was it, Labor Day weekend, or maybe the weekend before Labor Day, that we found this Bogota flight for $678, and it was Bogota to Madrid in business class on LATAM. Now, I don't go out of my way to fly LATAM, but you had a reason. You had a really good reason, and you were very, shall we say, incentivized to really want to do that flight.
Well, I am chasing, you know, Alaska elite status. So in case people don't realize, you know, LATAM is still a member of the Alaska Mileage Plan portfolio of, or what do we call it, menagerie of airlines, right, that are partners.
I feel like menagerie is the exact right word. I mean, they have such a wide, wide partnership. I mean, I think Aeroplan is really nudging into their space, but I mean, Alaska definitely has a wide range.
I think Alaska Mileage Plan still kind of takes the cake. Aeroplan might be they're like kind of like Avis, right? We're number two, but we try harder. But I think Mileage Plan is probably the king right now.
As long as it can be. As long as it can be. So we find this flight, and I was pretty excited because I was able to book that with American Express Business Platinum, pay with points, so you get 35% back.
Yeah, you were more excited than me at some point, I think. I think you were more excited for the deal, I think. I was excited for the mileage accrual. You were excited for the deal, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like, you know, I wanted to... You accrue all these membership rewards points, and in my head, I always want to try to get a good bargain. And this, I felt like, was a really good bargain. I mean, you get, what, 35% of the points back. You're flying, you know, you're getting, what, 9.5 hours of flying time. I mean, it's not the most amazing product. It is a red eye. But, you know, you're still getting a pretty good experience for that. And, you know, the miles, if Alaska ever credits me.
Yeah, you know, I literally just today put in the request because, you know, you're supposed to wait 14 days, I guess, after flight for the, what is it, for like certain partners or something that aren't electronic. So I was just following the rules. It said 14 days later, I put in my request.
Yeah, I put it in like the weekend we got back.
Have they credited?
I mean, I don't even have the boarding pass. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm going to do with that one, but I'm going to hope. And so I'll follow up this weekend.
Keep your boarding passes, people. Don't get rid of your boarding passes. Keep them.
There you go. That is such a great reminder. And usually I keep them, but if they're like the paper printed out boarding passes and it's not like an actual boarding pass on cardstock, I forget. And it was one of those hotels in Madrid, which is our second destination, that I just couldn't. But getting between Bogota and Madrid was the easiest part of this entire trip.
It was the only like variable that didn't change, right? It was the only constant.
It was. And that said, it was on the table because this fare was cancelable up until like a week or two out. And so,
well, I had one of these booked and canceled it, if you recall. So actually I had 10 PNRs on this trip, then more than nine.
So of those nine, I think, what was it? Was it three or four? Or what it took for us to finally arrive at something that got us into Bogota.
That is true, and which is surprisingly, you wouldn't think it'd be that complicated a thing to figure out, but the choices or the options available to you are not super great. You know, there's not too many sexy ways to fly down to Bogota. Actually, there is one, but it's cost prohibitive, right? It's Emirates does fly Miami to Bogota, right? Oh, and I guess there are some East Coast to Bogota in some kind of a business class, but the Avianca products and what they fly these days from North America to Bogota, not that exciting, if you ask me, at least from what I understand.
Virtually nothing is exciting. I mean, I think you've got the JFK to Bogota on the 787 when they fly the 787. And I think that's probably the only other exciting thing. And candidly, had that Emirates, you know, flight for first class become available for two seats, we would have been doing that. There would have been no negotiation.
You would have forced it, huh?
It would have not been a choice. It's been a while since I've darkened their door.
Well, I don't know. Hurricane Milton might have had some other ideas behind that, by the way. Even if there was award availability.
We got lucky. Yeah. So we had flights down to Miami. Then we had flights from Miami to Bogota. And then we had flights down to Tampa. And then on to Miami with an overnight in Tampa. That would have been really bad with Hurricane Milton because we would have been landing like a day after the hurricane. And then finally, the weirdest thing was like, what was it, 3 or 4 days before we departed? You find this like $300 or $400 fare in business class down via Houston one way to Bogota. It had a long layover in Houston, but I mean, a close in, fairly inexpensive revenue fare. I was pretty impressed with that one.
That was quite the find. I think it's one of several 3 days out kind of premium class finds that we've had on this trip. But yeah, it was pretty amazing to find, you know, a sub $400 business class. I think it was like $372 on United through Houston. I think that's a great deal. I don't know why I guess it just had extra seats or something. But yeah, I think we did really well as far as positioning ourselves down to Bogota, as it turns out, and we managed to avoid the hurricane.
And that was such a good deal. I didn't even try to use the American Express pay with points for 35% back. I was like, I am not going to let this thing get lost. Well, actually, you booked it for me, and I think I gotta make good on that one.
Well, you covered the other one, so I think we're all squared.
There you go. One thing on this podcast, we we try to keep track of that stuff somewhat closely, or not.
I know it's really hard.
Not at all.
Travel Stories Accounting is not going to be a one of the big five accounting firms.
There you go. There is no Pratt and
Pratt and Whitney? What?
No, I was going to try to do Pratt and what's the British engine maker? I was trying to make a kind of a play on words.
Pratt and Royce? What?
Yeah, Pratt and Royce Accounting.
Okay. There's also not going to be Travel Stories Comedy, you know, stand up anytime soon either. So I know listeners are probably clamoring for that, but you know, the best stand up of Trevor Mountcastle is probably not going to be an episode.
Unless it's at 8,000 feet, because there was some of that.
Well, I guess, are we going there? Are we going to go there?
I think if you have too little oxygen, Things start sounding a lot more funny.
I agree. I think lack of oxygen makes this man a very, very funny person, completely unintentionally. Oh my God. Are we subjecting our listeners to this, by the way?
No.
Well, anyway, the Houston was a very nice airport to visit. A lot of construction going on. We did a good amount of lounge hopping. We did a couple of priority pass restaurants.
I think it was probably the best managed Centurion Lounge that I've been in, candidly.
Very fair comment. I mean, they did the crowd control and they did the spreading people out and they managed it really well.
Very actively. I thought that was exceptional. Right. So a couple of priority pass restaurants that we kind of forced ourselves to do.
Well, one of us was not enjoying the having another lunch of chicken thighs at the Amex Centurion Lounge. So one of us is getting a little hangry.
I think it was both of us.
Okay, maybe it was both of us. Okay.
You can only have so many chicken thighs.
Yeah, I don't know. I every single time I go to a Centurion Lounge, it's if I want lunch or dinner, it's, oh, here, have another flavor of chicken thigh. Thank you.
Yeah, I go for the sweets, and I don't remember them having very good sweets at this one.
Even the cookies were like a little bit lackluster at this one. Usually the cookies are amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess they spent all the money on management of the lounge and not on the food and beverage, I guess.
Well, you know, you take care of your people, I guess. So anything of note for the Priority Pass restaurants? I can't even remember the names. I just remember one of them was Mexican, and I think I had some nice tacos that were not chicken thighs, and or at least I don't think they were. And if they were, they were well-seasoned.
It's like a Cadillac tequila bar or something is one of them. And I think we went to Landry's Seafood was the other. You know, mind you, I mean, you know, I think we probably, it wasn't the best value or best food ever. But, you know, it was honestly, I really enjoyed my burrito. I was hungry and it hit the spot. So I was happy with my lunch at the Cadillac Kitchen or whatever it was, tequila bar or in Terminal A.
It was tasty.
And the service was friendly enough. I think Landry's is also not a horrible place, I think, to go. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was Landry's. And I thought that was actually very good as well.
Yeah. I mean, mind you, we essentially had like, what, one thing of, you had a drink and a shrimp cocktail is essentially all that we.
That's all we could afford.
That's all we could afford. We still had some extra balance to have to pay, I guess, on the card right afterwards. I mean, the primary and the guest of the priority pass didn't even cover that, I guess.
Yeah. But I think I expected that for a place like Landry's.
We also had a throwback, you know, so we went to one of the United clubs and this thing had not, I mean, this thing in Terminal C, I'm pretty sure this United club was almost identical to what it was when it was Continental Airlines. Like, I mean, it still had these like lovely, like wood doors that like closed down on you. And it's like, oh, you're now in a Continental club, but that's not what it was. It was clearly now a United club, but a lot of the furnishings haven't changed much in probably a decade or two.
And that was an interesting theme we had through the first half of the trip is just Continental continuing to live in different forms.
I guess so. I think we were both exhausted by the time we actually got on our flight to actually get to Bogota, right?
And I don't really sleep sitting up very well. And I just conked right out. I mean, I think I conked out on the ascent. On the ascent, I woke up and I'm like, wait, I missed dinner? And they come back and they're like, we only have what was beef or something. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be perfect. And they were still able to accommodate me.
Yeah, you had the better meal. I stupidly got the fish, and that was disgusting.
United and fish. I don't know why you even tried it.
United and in-flight catering. I think they have a little bit of a trend going on. I think a lot of people have been dumping on United for what they serve, and probably rightly so. I don't know that the quality of what they serve, at least on these domestic first flights. I mean, the pictures that I've seen lately, they don't inspire very much.
Oh, yeah. I travel with a Snickers bar now, thanks to Ed. If you've got United Catering or a Snickers bar, he's like, you're better off with a Snickers bar. I still give it a shot, but it's not incredible.
And, you know, nothing wrong with the service, nothing wrong with that. It's just, I wish they would kind of talk to Scott Kirby about, you know, maybe tighten the screw or no, loosen the screws a little bit on the catering budget.
Or just stop trying. Like, the other thing is they try to do these random things. Like, I don't know, is Kiwa, if I'm pronouncing it right, like, just, is that supposed to just taste better at 30, 40,000 feet? Like, they try to do these random things. And it's not just United. Like, all these airlines are trying to do crazy different takes on food. And it takes a lot to be able to do that. Alaska, they can succeed with it, but not a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, Scott Kirby, Andrew Nocella, I know you guys are listeners. here's our advice to you. Here's our armchair CEO. Go poach the in-flight catering people at Alaska. They know what they're doing. They're, you know, they're catering mostly, you know, 737. So you know what? It's not like they exactly have a lot of options, you know? So whatever they're doing, they're making it work.
Yeah, those facilities on the 737 is not that exhaustive. It's not like you're cooking an open pan omelet like I've seen Etihad do on their 777s and 737s.
So, you know, our actual flight to Bogota was, you know, pretty, I guess, pedestrian overall. You know, it's just a bunch of narrow bodies, you know, recliner seats. But we get to Bogota, you know, our immigration is pretty quick, right? I don't recall. I mean, there were definitely some other flights coming in at about the same time, but I think we managed to make it through there pretty quick.
Yeah, I felt like it was really streamlined until we got landside and realized that there was no car service waiting for us, despite having coordinated it through our Hyatt concierge.
It's definitely a black mark for the Grand Hyatt in Bogota, huh?
It really was. And they didn't really have a service recovery for that. I was pretty disappointed with that one.
That's surprising.
I think where the Grand Hyatt really shone was that breakfast. I think the lounge in the evening was okay. The room upgrades were wonderful. I mean, the Grand Hyatt, just for our listeners' sake, is close to the airport. So it's not in the downtown area, but it's probably about, I don't know, about a 20-minute walk to like the convention center. We did that walk the following day. There was an anime conference. You're probably about, what, 5, maybe an 8-minute walk to the U.S. Embassy. So you're near some things, and it's just a very expansive.
Yeah, it's much more like spread out, kind of up-and-coming kind of neighborhood instead of like an older, kind of well-to-do part of Bogota. It's probably a little bit more modern and almost like quite a bit more suburban, if I had to characterize it. Would that be a fair way to say it?
Yeah, it definitely felt much more suburban, but it didn't take going too far to be able to start feeling like you were more in an urban environment, which made it interesting.
So it's kind of a dense suburban, I guess, because, you know, you still had restaurants and shops and other things that were within walking distance, although you also had long like avenues and kind of highways and other things that were kind of breaking up the space.
Yeah.
Grand Hyatt itself is a beautiful hotel. It's very modern, not that old, I don't think. I don't know. I didn't look at when it was open, but it would not be out of place, you know, in a place like Taipei or Tokyo or some other place in Asia.
Yeah, it definitely had that vibe. I mean, I feel like the more Hyatts that I stay at overseas, it feels like they're really embracing the Asian, you know, the Asian market.
The design is aesthetic, maybe.
Yeah, the aesthetics in some cases, you know, you see that in the food offerings as well. It's just an interesting kind of gradual change that I've observed, you know, whether you're in Europe, whether you're in South America, it just seems like it feels more familiar than it used to be.
Yeah. Well, and as an Asian, you know, I will say I definitely approve of the breakfast fruit selection, as you were kind of alluding to earlier. You know, they do have a really good spread and we were offered that breakfast buffet as globalists. So we decided to take that because it was quite the feast of foreign fruit for me, at least. I think I tried at least like 5 or 6, you know, fruits that I'd never seen in my life, including my favorite, as it turned out, was this kind of yellow dragon fruit. They called it pitaya, but I think they did call all dragon fruit, I think, pitaya. But this yellow variety, I think I've only seen in Central America. It was delicious.
Yeah, you were eating things that looked like they were from a completely different planet, and you were truly in your element, my friend.
I loved it. I love that stuff. I mean, it reminded me of my first trip to Bangkok and having pomelo and rose apple and all these tropical fruits that, again, you don't find here in North America that were just so delicious. And that's, for me, that's part of that joy, the joy of traveling, is just going to other environments, other, you know, places, and just it being able to experience the local product.
Completely agree, especially when you can do it in a, and this is probably something that folks will disagree with, but when you can do it in a safe environment, you know, a lower risk environment like your hotel, where I don't think the fruit's going to be any different, you know, if you go to a restaurant, but doing it at the hotel, you're in a safe environment, you know, it's probably properly prepared, cleaned, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, I think they have hopefully Western standards of hygiene and making sure that, you know, things are done in certain ways so that, you know, guests don't get, you know, food poisoning or are subject to, you know, some of the other kind of bugs that are out there, you know, stomach bugs, et cetera. You know, hopefully they're more sensitive to that, especially in like a major 5-star international hotel.
Yeah, exactly. So we did the opposite thing as we did last year when we went to Rio. You know, our South America stays seemed to be 3 nights, apparently, you know, there's always hotel hopping. Apparently, it's now a rule. It'll be really fun in Argentina.
I kind of forced that. I know you did. You weren't the one looking for that. I know I'm the one that probably were. You were deferring to my wishes, I guess. I appreciate that, by the way.
Yeah, it turned out interesting. So we had the one night at the Grand Hyatt.
No. Two nights at the Grand Hyatt, I thought. Two nights and then one night at the, it was two. Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. Because Rio was two nights at the JW in Rio and then one night at the Grand Hyatt. This was two nights at the Grand Hyatt. And then we transitioned to the JW, which is in the finance district near other embassies, such as the Italian embassy.
Yes.
And that was a completely different experience. It was an older, smaller hotel. Yeah. It really felt like we'd gone to a different city, a different kind of vibe, back to the 70s.
Architecture was different. Strangely enough, a lot of like European architecture. We were surrounded by a lot of like two-door and four-door. No. Just we were a bunch of different like English architecture, right? With like some low-rise buildings and things.
See, I'm not the only one with the bad humor today.
I know. I it rubs off sometimes. I'm sorry. You have an influence.
At least I got something. So this hotel, though, was just like, it was just the most interesting, welcoming experience as I've had in a while. So this one, you're a platinum, I'm a titanium, you got your room key first, but they ended up upgrading me, even though it took a little longer for them to kind of do everything. As they're explaining the benefits of the hotel, they highlight the restaurant. I'll spoil that part first. The lounge was actually far superior in the fruit selection and the overall food than the restaurant. It was probably the first time in a long time.
I know. I think this is one of the only hotels I've been to where the lounge selection of food for breakfast was so much better than what was in the restaurant, which makes no sense to me.
None at all.
Yeah.
So they mentioned that. Then they mentioned the lounge experience. The lounge experience is, you know, I think it was 6 to 9 or 6 to midnight, something like that. They specifically say two drinks per person rather than, you know, as much as you want alcoholic drinks, wine, et cetera, as you want while you're during their hours. And I'm already like, oh, well, that's a little, I'll use the word chintzy, especially for a JW. And I'm already starting to kind of be like, what's going on with this place? Why are we, you know, why are we giving them our business? And then they give us these little chits for welcome amenity. It's, you know, half bottle of wine or sodas or waters. And then you get like a savory or sweet type thing. And so this is the funny part, right? You being nice because you're like, oh, well, if the lounge is limiting us to two drinks, you had plenty of sodas because I had picked up a bunch of sodas for you. And I think you picked up more from the lounge. You end up getting a half bottle of wine. I did a half bottle of wine. We both got ice cream for our welcome amenities. After we finally got the amenities, we were pleasantly surprised. We were almost reverse envoyed.
This hotel is going to forever be seared in my mind as the ice cream hotel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So reverse Bonvoy sort of experience here. You get your welcome amenity before you came up to the lounge and you had this, you sent the photo. I'm like, yeah, we're not going to see him for a while. It was like a 3 or 4 scoop ice cream sundae.
This was a masterpiece of ice cream sundae engineering, I got to tell you. I don't know who their person is who makes these sundaes, because clearly they're making quite a few. Because I think if I were somebody going checking into this hotel, I would probably be like, ice cream sundae? This is not something that I'm used to seeing. I'm going to pick that. I think clearly a lot of people pick the ice cream because I think you ended up with one of the last sundaes of the day. And I think they'd start running out of certain flavors and stuff, if I'm not mistaken.
I did. But for me, the ice cream sundae, that was just simply fantastic. And probably the most memorable thing of this entire trip of lots of memories was in the lounge. I go up, I'm looking at the desserts and I asked the chef who happened to be standing there, is there anything that does not have hazelnut? And he just, his look just goes sullen. He's like, no, everything has it. So he's like, I'm going to make you something. He says to me, I'm going to make you something. He comes out with the most incredible amaretto ice cream sundae that I have ever had. This ice cream was just amazing.
It was a good flavor. Good flavor.
I don't think I stopped talking about it until after I had landed
really
back in the States.
You invoked the memory of this ice cream on multiple occasions. Yeah, I think now that we've stoked the memory of this, I'm probably going to hear about it later this week too. I just got to say, yeah, I mean, I think that flavor was amazing. My chocolate sundae with like Oreo sprinkles and candy and strawberry and I don't know, all kinds of stuff. First of all, I think we skipped lunch that day because we were visiting the Salt Cathedral, and I was hangry a little bit. And this was the first thing I ate. I don't know if that had something to do with it, but I got to tell you, this was an amazing sundae. And I ate all of it, and it took a while. Yes, I was delayed coming to the lounge because this was delivered to my room. I made sure that it was completely consumed.
And I am sure that it was well savored.
Yes, it was.
So I think we covered the hotel and actually getting to Bogota. I think we probably spent a whole lot more time on that.
We probably spent more time than people care about.
So what did we actually do in Bogota? I think we had three major things. You want to talk about the Salt Cathedral?
Yeah, you know, this is pretty far out. I mean, this is not something that's very close. So we, you know, before we do that, can we talk a little bit about what happened in that? I'm searching Facebook, or I'm just, you know, doom scrolling or whatever. And I see that someone that I'm familiar with, that somebody that I know in the community is in Bogota, right? So we happened to find a mutual friend of ours, Jason, who just randomly, oh, he's in Bogota. So, you know, we of course reach out to him. And this turns out to be actually be a pretty clutch thing because, you know, this, our friend Jason is fully lingual in Spanish.
Oh yeah. He was fluent. He was developing relationships, you know, rapports and everything.
Super, super comfortable speaking, conversing, having long conversations about random things in Spanish. You know, this ended up being quite helpful for us because, you know, we were going to some places like this Salt Cathedral, which is not close to the city at all. It was hour plus, and in this case, it was a weekend, so it was even probably longer because of the traffic. What, a good, 90 minutes each way or something like that?
Yeah, it was definitely almost 2 hours the way out. And then I think the way back was probably closer to 90 minutes. And to be in an equivalent of an Uber XL, Jason was able to negotiate that price separate from Uber. He stuck around when we got to the Salt Cathedral. He even had, like, pulling into town of where the Salt Cathedral is, he even pulls off so we can buy our tickets without having to wait in line right at the actual attraction. This driver was really good, and we had him because of Jason's expert, you know, language and social engineering abilities, I will say.
Yeah. And this attraction was basically a salt mine that had been tunneled into a mountainside. And after, you know, some time, I guess they just decided to repurpose it as to turn it into a grand church, right? With several different crypts and chapels and a huge main hall that, and it's called the Salt Cathedral. And you descend several hundred feet into the mountainside to kind of get to this place. Very popular. It was, you know, you had, you know, various people, you know, having mass and doing all kinds of things there. Very much akin to some of the caverns that I guess you can visit here in the U.S. I know close to here in the D.C. area, people are probably familiar with things like Luray Caverns. Very similar to that in a way, you know, in terms of kind of the feel or kind of maybe even the popularity, you know, because it's a pretty big tourist site in that area.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was, the amount of people was just astonishing to me, you know, that are going down, you know, what, 1,000 feet under or 800 feet underground. There's just crowds and crowds of people. We ended up walking in just at the end of a mass because I think that was Sunday, right? That we were there. And I just couldn't believe the grandioseness. I mean, it was probably 150 feet high ceilings in some areas. They just really crafted this beautifully.
I mean, the ceiling heights were of the stature of a cathedral, right? As you said, you know, it's 100 feet high walls, very much with the same grandeur and, you know, the impressiveness of an actual man-made cathedral above ground.
Yeah, yeah, and thousands of people. My gosh. But just the beauty of some of those things. The thing that I remember the most that I really liked was that they have these angels that aren't necessarily highlighted everywhere in the cathedral.
The hidden angels, right?
They're the hidden angels. They call them the guardian angels because you don't always see them. And we had seen a couple of them, and just the level of detail and the beauty of them was just so incredible. You expect a lot of that for the more religious focused things like Stations of the Cross and stuff and altars and stuff to see these little, I shouldn't say little, they were like 4 or 5 feet tall, right?
Yeah. Lots of intricate carvings, beautiful chandeliers, lots of, you know, ambient lighting, you know, just definitely an interesting place. I don't know if I want to go back, but, you know, having seen it once, I think definitely worth the visit.
Yeah, I was excited to be able to do it. For better or for worse, I feel like Bogota is kind of a city of glad I did it once, I checked the box sort of things. If family wants to go back, I'll consider it. If we find a good flight, I'll consider it. But next one that we went to was Montserrat. And again, tracking to our wonderful experiences in Rio, we just had to have a cable car, and somehow we were able to get a funicular as well, which I thought was pretty cool, because they have both of them going up to Montserrat, this church on a church, and effectively it really felt like a mini town up on the mountain. And you're going up, 1,000 feet or so. It was windy when we went up there too, so it was a little dicey.
It was. It was very windy.
It definitely felt maybe not as severe of a cable car experience as Sugarloaf, but it was still, you were going way the heck up there. And when you turned back and you saw that big, big, beautiful city of Bogota behind you, just getting smaller and smaller and smaller, I mean, it really gave you perspective.
It's a beautiful viewpoint, and you really do see the majority of the city kind of in your line of sight when you're up there. That being said, definitely felt the altitude. I mean, we were already kind of feeling it as sea level people as far as our normal altitude. Getting up to 8,000, 9,000 plus feet. I don't know about you, but I definitely felt winded and short of breath at times as we were climbing upstairs and kind of walking around the place. So it is something to consider, you know, and you know, we were there for a good full 3 days, and I don't think I ever quite recovered from the altitude or the height. You know, I definitely felt a little bit more encumbered from a, you know, short of breath type of situation as we're kind of walking around there.
I think you said it best. Bogota is one of the few cities, depending upon what aircraft that you fly out on, where the aircraft, as it's pressurized, is actually, it brings you lower, closer to sea level than the airport that you're sitting at. That you're departing from.
I forgot about that comment that I made. Yeah, I think if you're going to get on a Dreamliner, you're actually going to like lose altitude from an air pressure perspective, I think.
It's like you get that little bit of relief there. My gosh, I still remember getting to Madrid. I was like, whoa, this is so much better. So much better. So then the last thing we did before we leave Bogota, and I thought this was interesting because we're up in Montserrat and Jason's kind of pointing out where we're going to walk. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't look that far. I don't know whether you were thinking that, but
it looked far to me. Well, I was expecting to do some walking. I didn't think didn't look ridiculous though.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was something like, you know, you get to the bottom of Montserrat back via the funicular, which was a much more comfortable ride, I'll say, compared to the cable car going up. You go down some altitude still. And then I think it was probably a few mile walk to get to this long pedestrian street that was nice. Again, this is Columbus Day. This is, I think they actually call it like Indigenous People's Day or something weird.
Well, I think we call it Indigenous People's Day. I think that is the new name for it. Really?
No, they had some special name for it because they were celebrating. It was a holiday in Bogota as well. Because when we got to Plaza de Simón Bolívar, they were setting up this huge, huge celebration. And we saw it from the airport, ironically enough.
Who knew that Columbus Day was celebrated in Colombia, you know?
When you say it that way, I feel stupid to think that, like, why wouldn't it have been? Although it's spelled differently, right? Colombia has got the O versus U, but...
Well, it's named after Columbus, you know? Like, Colombia is named after Columbus.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Dump on me today, huh? But they do call it something that seems mildly close to Indigenous People's Day.
Yes.
Like, trying to read the translation because it was closed captioning in Spanish.
And to be fair, I think I lasted reasonably well all the way to the Bolivar Plaza. But once we got there, I think we were then on a quest to find some place to eat or something. And I think if anything has kind of informed me about life on this trip is if I'm with Trevor, I need to have a plan for where we're going to eat. Wandering and trying to find a random places has been of limited success, I think, in the guy's trip travels, if I had to be completely blunt.
You are not alone there. You are not alone there.
you were also feeling it a little bit, huh?
I was. Oh, it's known as Dia de la Raza y de la Hispanidad.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Well, Day of the Race and Hispanicity. Hispanicity? Okay, hopefully we haven't offended anybody here. I was just attempting to highlight the fact that there was a big event in the Simón Bolívar Plaza, and we saw it growing and building, but we didn't get to experience it ourselves. But it's, you know, kind of a pretty cool thing, yeah. But yes, we ended up finally just giving up and going to grab food from a place. It wasn't amazing, it wasn't bad, but... It
wasn't bad, yeah.
If there's one thing that, other than the ice cream, I felt like I left that city thinking that we missed the amazing culinary diversity that it has to have somewhere.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true. I mean, I you know, I mean, again, I'm probably going to offend some people. Maybe there is some really amazing Colombian food out there, but it definitely isn't what is well seated throughout, you know, at least North America. I mean, you have plenty of Peruvian food, you have plenty of Mexican food, you have plenty of, you know, food from a number of different countries, but Colombia seems to not be one of them. That being said, the dollar does go very far in Colombia. I think we were, as far as dining out was concerned, I think I definitely felt like everything was inexpensive, right? I think you could do really well as an American.
Yeah, Ubers were inexpensive. Food was inexpensive.
Uber was good. Yep. I think the hotels for, you know, value, I think good value for money for the US dollar. I feel like Colombia is one of those places where the actual like touristy part of it is, I would say, not super amazing, but, you know, as kind of a place to hang out, it doesn't seem that bad, right?
I don't know. I was really excited to get to the Salt Cathedral in Montserrat. I mean, but yeah, I think hanging out would have been cool too. I mean, we definitely got, I thought, a pretty decent meal when we went over by the convention center. I think you just have to be a little bit more intentional. And I think we just weren't there. I think we took Jason for granted in that, you know, he knew the city reasonably enough. And so we just sort of figured that we'd happen upon some good food here and there, and indecision just kind of got the best of us.
Yeah, I think we need to probably have stronger plans probably for the future. But again, you know, I think that don't want to leave negative opinion of Bogota or Colombia for that matter. And we definitely didn't make it to Cartagena or Cali or Medellin or any of these other places. So I know that there's probably a lot more to see.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No. Plenty more to see. Plenty more to see. A nice, easy connecting type airport too. Want to cover the lounge situation just really briefly, and then we should probably jump to the flight and Madrid just to try to speed things up a bit.
Yeah, just quickly. I mean, you know, the El Dorado Lounge, right? What an interesting lounge though at Bogota Airport. I mean, from a layout and footprint perspective, it has to be the most interesting layout lounge I can think of. You know, definitely in the Americas.
I felt like I walked like the entire length of the terminal in the lounge. They had this cool situation where you could like plug in your headphones to watch TV. They had like six TVs on a wall. Then they had another sitting area. Then they had like this kids area that was
amazing. Amazing kids area.
It was huge. And it had slides and it was very well themed, like foresty and, you know, lush kind of greens there.
Yeah, it was like a jungle playground, like literally like done up in the most crazy way possible, I think, in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that looked exciting. Then they had a little like cafe area or dining area that wasn't included for Priority Pass members.
Yes, extra charge.
I think you had little lounging chairs that were kind of littered here and there, a conference room.
Throughout the hallways.
Yeah, they had a boardroom type conference room. Then you got to the bathrooms. By the time you got to the bathrooms, you probably walked 2 to 3 gates distance. Excuse me. We're talking about these international airport.
I know. Longest walk for bathrooms and a drink I can ever. I can't even think of a lounge that would have as long a walk to get a beer or wine and use the facilities.
Yeah, you had to walk to the far end of the terminal. I mean, you were like at the end. The bar, like behind the bar, was the end. Like that, no more building there. I mean, this lounge had easily had to be 4 to 6 gates long.
Yeah, it was like half the terminal building. It felt like, at least.
It was.
But long and narrow, right?
Long and narrow. So we didn't spend a whole lot of time there.
No.
Then we moved to the Copa Lounge because, well, we could. And we got another taste of Continental. Just, I like to think that Copa is the last vestiges of Continental.
Spanish cousin?
Yes.
Or the Latin cousin?
The Panamanian cousin.
Yes.
That lounge was entirely unimpressive. They had a bar, they had a couple of snacks, and they were closing in like 20 minutes.
It was nice, and that was it, right? It wasn't looked like a nice place, but otherwise, there's no reason to be there. I think it's a skip if you had to go as far as lounge hopping at Bogota Airport.
Without a doubt. The last lounge that we were able to get into, obviously, there is an Avianca lounge that you can stare at from the LATAM lounge, but the LATAM lounge is pretty nice. Really reminded me of the Star Alliance lounge in GRU in Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice airy upper level versus in the basement as some of the other ones were. I felt the food was pretty good. The food and bev, pretty good.
Decent.
Yeah, it was clear that Bogota is a focus city for LATAM.
And by the way, ice cream again. They did have an ice cream fridge.
Oh, yeah, they did.
I don't know what it is about Bogota and ice cream. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's ice cream city.
And all of it's good. All of it's so good.
Yes.
Anything memorable other than the birthday celebration at midnight on the flight, from your opinion?
You know, it was a typical LATAM flight. I mean, I've actually done quite a bit of LATAM, and actually you have too, I guess. Although I have to say, you know, I've actually flown LATAM on like 3 mileage runs to Easter Island. So I've seen the inside of a LATAM 787 and 767 quite a few times. And this was definitely their oldest product. And it looked every bit as old as it was. In fact, it looked older than it was. It looked like it was from like the 1970s somehow, even though it was in a Dreamliner.
It was well used.
It's well used. I will say, you know, the linens and stuff they give you a very nice comforter, very nice mattress pad, you know, for business class. I mean, some business class don't even give you a mattress pad, right? So I slept relatively comfortably. And, you know, honestly, I will tell you, I will say this to our listeners. This was probably the best transatlantic flight that I've had, at least from a sleep perspective, because being an actual 10-hour flight, you know, I'm not used to having that much time in air going over the Atlantic, being on the East Coast. And it really is, I think, the right amount of time to have a meal, have a good night's sleep, wake up, have breakfast, and then get off the plane like that. And that's literally all I did on this plane.
Yeah, I could have done without it being as long of a flight. I just felt like that seat was just so uncomfortable at times. I mean, I definitely woke up feeling worse for wear, but I did get a fair amount of sleep, just like you had mentioned you did. LATAM is just sort of, I think for the price of the ticket, I felt like we got very good value, but I don't see that as a go out of my way to do.
No, it's not an aspirational product. Definitely not the old equipment, right? If you're going to get one of the old seats on LATAM, it's not something to aspire for. But put it in the context of what you can fly to South America, right? It's not that bad, you know, I mean, for the continent.
Oh, it's better than a Barca lounger, which is how we got down there, right?
Exactly, exactly. So for that, I try to say keep it within perspective. I think LATAM is, if considering that it's probably one of the nicer ways to fly within the continent of South America, I think you could do worse, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the British Airways of South America.
Yep, yep.
We'll go with that one. Hopefully that doesn't rile anybody up. So we get to Madrid. LATAM still flies, despite no longer being Oneworld, they still fly into that Iberia terminal, that midfield or satellite terminal.
Well, they still co-share with Iberia, right?
Oh, they do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do. Yeah, I think they still co-share. And remember, we had Iberia passengers in the LATAM lounge, so.
Yes, you're right. You're right. I don't know. I just feel like that breakup for LATAM is just taking a long time. I mean, it's interesting to kind of watch how some of these airlines, it'll be interesting to continue to watch SAS and how their breakup goes from Star Alliance to they had been Star Alliance, right?
Right. And now SkyTeam.
The difference with them, though, was I could never find space on SAS. Like, I know others did. But like, I just felt like SAS was sort of like, you know, another Swiss, for lack of a better way of saying it, where for the longest time you just couldn't get space. But neither here nor there, it's just interesting to watch how some of these airlines kind of do that divorcing from their old alliances.
It's so weird because I feel like, doesn't Qatar Airways own some piece of LATAM or something? Or there's some sort of agreement there? Because I feel like somehow that is why they're still somehow like attached to, I think, some of these airlines.
There's definitely some relationship because I always see a LATAM bird in Doha. And I think there was a period of time where Qatar was actually wet leasing LATAM aircraft. I think sometime around the pandemic or just before, because they were having the A350 problems with the paint and stuff. And then they weren't accepting their own 787s, but I guess they'd borrow somebody else's. I'll defer more to, you know, the folks on Dots Lines Destinations for the real facts on that one.
Yeah, this is probably not the right. We're talking the wrong podcast, Trevor. We're travel stories.
Yeah, we are not experts on that.
No.
So we get to that Madrid terminal. I felt like it was just very poorly organized, but we also arrived right at the time that a Emirates A380 landed. And so there was a lot of confusion with a lot of people. It just felt like it took forever, but we finally got through immigrations and customs, and we were off to our hotel, and we tried something different against my better judgment. And I didn't come to terms with why it was against my better judgment until we were past the point of being able to cancel.
Yep.
So where did we stay?
We stayed at the Hyatt Regency Residences, Madrid, which is interesting because it's a Hyatt Regency. It's a hotel with only like 20 something rooms in this multi-story tower. It's pretty close to pretty swanky, Tony part of town in Madrid, right? There's an Intercontinental right across the street, a big avenue right in front of us. But it's very interesting. Not a lot of services at this particular hotel. It is pretty close to the Hyatt Regency Hespersia or something like that. The other Hyatt Regency that's, although we didn't actually see where it was, but it's right in that area.
Yeah, I think it's like a block away. I think I could almost see it from the bathroom window.
Yeah. And we actually had a 2-bedroom apartment is essentially what we had.
Yeah. And that was the interesting thing. So this being my third apartment that I've been in this year, I thought that apartment was probably the middle of the three apartments that I've had. The quality of a lot of the furnishings was by far the best, but the layout was a little bit on the wonky side and it was just weird. Like you're in this Hyatt and you expect some level of luxury. They gave you a little bit, right? They're like, oh yeah, breakfast is included. Yes, it was it was toast, it was juice, it was some cereal.
It was a loaf of bread.
And they had milk in the fridge.
Yes.
Make it yourself.
The ultra-pasteurized kind, right? That you keep at room temperature.
Yeah, yeah. So
welcome to Europe.
I thought that part was kind of weird. You know, had the Hyatt Regency soaps and stuff. So it was really like a halfway house to Airbnb.
I remember the sheets and the bedding and the bed itself were super comfortable.
Yes, yes.
In fairness.
That was where they excelled. Like both of the other apartments that I had this year, the bed was just horrible. And this, I felt like I was in a Hyatt Regency for the bed, at least. All of that was very, very good. And I think that for that reason, I might actually stay there again in the future. Although that door.
Oh, yeah. What a crazy door. Like it's impossible to open.
So in all fairness, European apartment doors are generally pretty sturdy.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
The doors that I've had, and in fact, my wife's aunt lives in southern France, as I've mentioned in past podcasts. And her door has like, I don't know, five or six deadbolts in it. Like you turn it and like these deadbolts, it literally feels like you're locking a vault door.
There must be lots of like arms dealers, you know, with like, you know, security detail and, you know, you need to be able to like not be able to knock down the door. I mean, I don't know. It was substantial. It was substantial.
It was. I wish like we did a video of this.
The main hotel door even was like that thing was it was like you're opening up like NORAD or something.
You're going down the mountain just to be able to open this big door. It's like kind of cantilevered.
Yeah, maybe they had a Stardo hotel if your door is like something you need two people to open or I don't know. But I do recall you had some disappointment. Wasn't the kind of luxury we're looking for on your birthday. By the way, this was his birthday. So I think you were expecting maybe a taste of something a little bit more, you know, that something that they would recognize you. Hey, it's your birthday. Hey, we've done this special thing for you. And they really, there was nothing to do, right? Because there's really no amenities in this hotel. It's literally just an apartment building that is masquerading as a hotel. I do think it was nice in that it's a lot of space. And it would be a great base of operations for a larger party. Like, I think if you had a family of five or six or something, you needed a place to stay. This could be definitely a possibility.
Even just with like when my daughter's older and has her own room, I could see this as being really valuable. So I'm glad we did that. We got the chance to wander a new area of Madrid for me, Salamanca. There's some nice Tony type places. I think Tiffany and Company, other high end stores. And I think we had some really good luck. We found this one little taberna, you know, hole in the wall, sort of stepped down and in for some drinks. And then you found this great, great place, Tinian Steakhouse, that was just absolutely fantastic for a birthday dinner.
And I was worried because I had not planned a place for you. I did not know where we were going to eat dinner. And I wanted it to be memorable and good. And I think I had an epiphany in that bar. I was like, hey, I need to get some real internet because I'm used to my like really slow 2G T-Mobile internet. It was not cutting it, you know, because I was trying to look up stuff, trying to find stuff. And I realized at that point, hey, this is let's spend a couple bucks. Let's get a global SIM. You know, and I think I used Nomad was the app that I use, which I have a referral from somebody. And that ended up being very clutch. And I think it's something where I realized, hey, I need to do that occasionally. If I'm getting frustrated with the speed of the internet, just pay the $5 or whatever. And you can do that pretty cheaply with some of these SIM apps, right? These eSIM apps that are out there, you know, that you can get on your phone and get online. And it's not that expensive or that complicated.
And it's so much easier with the eSIM. I mean, I've always kind of just stuck with the Google Fi. I ended up burning through 10 gigs, probably 11 or 12 gigs, to the point where they were starting to meter me down. And so, you know, you going that approach definitely made a lot more sense.
Yep. But this was a great steak dinner. Again, I found it on Google, you know, because I was looking around the area and finding what had high ratings that, you know, would be like a nice steak place. Because I think what both of us were in the mood for that night. It was the right place. It was absolutely the right place to go.
Absolutely. After the misses in Bogota, we just needed a really good steak.
Yes. Yes. And we got one. They knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. And I was surprised, you know, Salamanca being kind of a tonier area, more luxurious or
higher end.
Higher end area. I was also surprised that the pricing was actually less, ironically enough.
Very reasonable.
Very reasonable, you know, less than what we were seeing in the kind of really touristy area. Now, I mean, yeah, you should expect, I guess, that the touristy area is going to be expensive, but I usually expect that, like, you know, where there are 5-star hotels and, like, you know, the Tiffany's and other stuff are going to be usually equal to that. And they were probably a euro or two less for example, for, you know, a non-well drink, gin and tonic, for example.
Well, to be fair, the first two restaurants I think we scoped out, we started walking toward them. And we were like, whoa, these are way too expensive for us. Because, you know, we walked in. I was like, okay, yeah, this is.
They're all in suits. And
yeah. So we did. This place was a little bit more, you know, kind of into Salamanca, you know, like a little bit more residential, you know. So this is more of like it felt like more of a locals place, you know, where there were other English speakers there, but we were probably only maybe there's one other table of Americans. Everybody else was European.
And I like those places. I feel like you're better off there.
Yeah.
So if we think that the Grand Hyatt in Bogota was like the pinnacle of the trip's luxury for hotels, and that we just sort of took a step down, a small step down to the Marriott, and then a meaningful enough step down to the Hyatt residences, the last place we stayed at was, for me, a first. I'd never stayed at an AC hotel. That is a Marriott Bonvoy.
A new brand for you.
Yes, yes. No brand explorer with Bonvoy, unfortunately. So we had hemmed and hawed, but because we ended up having to fly out so early the next day. So essentially we had only two full nights in Madrid, barely that, because we left at 3 a.m. to go to the airport. We ended up narrowing in on the AC Hotel Atocha, which is probably about a 5-8 minute walk from the train station.
If that.
Yeah. And it's probably about a 20-minute walk to the Prado, just right along that one road, right along the Prado. So I was actually pleasantly surprised with it. I thought the area, I expected it to be a little bit different than it was. I thought it was fairly convenient. There's a nice museum, you know, somewhat nearby. Room was comfortable. It exceeded my rather low expectations, I'll say.
I mean, it was definitely one of the more economic options from a Marriott Bonvoy perspective. And, you know, it was just Madrid in general at that time of the, I don't know if it was this particular week or just all of October, but, you know, Madrid is not a very inexpensive place to stay. And your experience has been, it's just in general, it's an expensive hotel town, which is funny because I don't feel like that was kind of the long-term reputation. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, Spain was always kind of like the discount place to go, right? I mean, at least as far as Europe was concerned.
Yeah, but there's some change that happened. I mean, a lot of the hotels that we like to stay at are now in the €500 to €800 a night. Talking with friends, you know, such as Michael Traeger, who we've had on the show, that's more and more common. That's almost regular pricing. I mean, at that point, it's a little bonkers.
It totally is.
Yeah. And it's sort of, I mean, and that's what pushed us to go to this Hyatt Residences. That's probably about a 10 to 15 minute Uber ride from the kind of touristy area where you've got the pedestrian streets and everything. But I mean, if that's what it takes to get something affordable, I mean, that might have to be the compromise. I mean, yeah, you probably have similarly timed subway ride or metro ride, but.
Right. But you know, it was still 12,500 Hyatt points plus about €260 was what I paid for that 2-bedroom apartment, which honestly was a pretty good value compared to what they were, you know, the €500 per room, right? So, I mean, we were talking about spending $700, $800, maybe $1,000 at various hotels in an area, right? For two rooms.
Yeah. Yeah. And instead we were able to get one unit that had, you know, we both had our own privacy for that Hyatt Residences and it just worked. But yeah, I think that's a realization that I'm still in denial about. You know, my family loves going to Madrid. Well, I've been there three times in the last 3 years now. definitely hope to get back there with the family, but we're going to have to figure out what sacrifices we're going to make.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, the lodging has definitely had a kind of a bump in terms of its affordability. And quite honestly, the only thing that insulates us, I guess, is we do have this, obviously, miles and points hobby that helps us quite a lot, where at least we have a little bit of that insulation of, yeah, we could at least, you know, utilize other currencies other than dollars or euros, right, to help shoulder some of the burden of that financial cost.
Yeah, it's just interesting, like just like what Richard Kerr was saying on an earlier episode, the hotels almost seem like they're playing around with inventory more than even the airlines now.
Yes, yeah.
It's kind of a perplexing thing because we have all the tools for airlines. We don't necessarily, I mean, we're only starting to get tools for hotels. But one thing that I thought was kind of funny, checking into the AC hotel, as you get the amenity, the titanium amenity, right? They're like, would you like 500 Bonvoy points or $10? I was surprised because she specifically said $10, like US dollars versus euros.
Not 10 euros.
per person. And I'm like, gosh, $20 or 500 Marriott Bonvoy points. I'm going to have to, oh gosh, let me break out my Excel spreadsheet here.
It's funny how it's almost never worth it to take the points at a Marriott property.
I don't believe I've ever seen it be a better value.
They've never made it an enticing choice.
No.
Strangely enough.
Well, you earn so many on every other thing. Like you stay a night and you earn like 5,000 points just with all the multipliers and stuff.
We had a descending level of luxury from a hotel standpoint, but we did not have a descending level of luxury when it comes to airline travel, did we? Quite the opposite.
I actually want to cover one other thing from Madrid.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're not ready to move. Okay, fine. Sorry.
Not ready to move. So two things, I guess. Number one, we did make the pilgrimage back to Jose's, the bar that we talked about in episode 8 from the guys' trip. We had to make that pilgrimage. And then we made another interesting stop. So Jose Andres has a kind of visiting or finding España, kind of like equivalent to the Stanley Tucci finding Italy or searching for Italy. That he did a number of years ago. And so Jose Andres has a number of places that he goes in Madrid. And one of them is, for lack of a better way of saying it, this convent of nuns that make cookies. And so you enter into this, you ring a bell, they unlock the door, and typical Europe, right? Where they've got like these 10-foot high doors with a mini door inside. You enter this door, you walk down this kind of dimly lit corridor, you hang a left, and then you see this little area with a menu and a little pass-through area that's completely blocked, right? So you're never going to see who's on the other side. That's part of the point. The nuns don't see other people. And you order through a loudspeaker. And our experience, at least, was, okay, do you have this one? No, out. Do you have this one? Yes. Okay. You know, half a pound of that or half a kilo of that or whatever the measurement was. And then we ended up getting, I think, two different options. We had wanted three. The orange cookies were out, so we cannot report on the orange cookies. They had powdered cookies. And then, do you remember what the other one we had?
Like lemon or something, maybe? Something citrusy.
Yeah, I think it was lemon. And what you do is you tell them what the order is. You put your euros on this little Lazy Susan. They pop the change and your cookies, and then you grab them and you go. And it was just kind of a really unique experience.
Anachronistic.
Anachronistic. There you go. How's that for a $10 word?
Clearly, you know, something of a bygone era, right?
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, or fortunately, so the cookies that we brought back, some of them, the powdered cookies were more well received. I think the other cookies could have used a little bit more flavor. I mean, I hate to offer a critique.
I think the novelty of the convent is what people come for, not for the taste of the cookies.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. I mean, it is kind of a surreal experience when you think about it. Like, how often are you walking into a door within a door and you're like in this kind of weird place where you don't see anybody, there's nobody there. You know, it's just like the person behind the speaker.
I think the people who do like Lean Six Sigma would look at this process and be like, yeah, there's a lot of waste here that we can kind of cut out of this process. You know, I think McDonald's would look at this or food ordering process and they'd be like, hey, sister, Mother Superior, can we have a little talk? I think I got a way to improve your process here.
Yeah. What if we just move the window right to the street? The throughput would be incredible.
The nuns drive through. Oh, anyway, are we good with Madrid yet? Or do you have some more to share?
I think that's about all I think we wanted to cover on Madrid. We did go to some regular haunts that I was able to share with you, which I thought was fun.
It was good food and good drink. I think we had a far better time eating and drinking in Madrid than we did in Colombia.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, we ate well, and I think we were much happier for it and breathing better.
Yeah, that helped.
So we alluded to it earlier about the Aeroplan change fees. Before we left Bogota, I realize I'm jumping around here, but just for context, we had already checked out of our rooms in Bogota on the 15th, and we're in the lounge. They let us sit in the lounge. We're sipping on a bottle of wine and just sort of, you know, passing the time waiting to go to our like 10 p.m. or 10:30 flight. And we had set alerts in Expert Flyer. We had set seats.aero alerts for Lufthansa First Class. We had essentially put an all points bulletin out everywhere we could. I think we even did points. Yeah, none of them triggered. I just randomly, because I just do this randomly anyway, pull up United's mobile app because it's just the easiest to do a quick search.
I think we were both doing searches, award searches, pretty much periodically throughout the last couple of days.
Exactly. Exactly. And boom, I see two seats. It was like three seats, I think, but I was like, there's two seats immediately. Like it was almost a thing of beauty, almost a thing of beauty. Here we are. You're on one side of this high top table. I'm on the other.
It was like mission control.
Computers immediately come out. I got my Surface going. I get the other. Jason's just like watching in awe as we're like, like I got the AirPod in. I'm trying to call Aeroplan because I'm thinking maybe I can save the change fees. You're like, oh, I'm just booking it. I'm going to pay it. And I'm like, okay, fine. I don't want to miss out on this.
All systems nominal. Countdown in T-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Good luck. Lufthansa first.
Well, and it was funny because we had 8 a.m. flights to Frankfurt already. We were going to fly via Frankfurt in business class. I was so trying to keep that 8 a.m. flight. And finally, you're like, it's a 5 a.m. flight or 5 or 5:30 a.m. flight. It gets us more time at the terminal. We're going to just not sleep very much in Madrid. Like we're going to be on limited sleep, but it's going to be better. And I'm like, yes, speaking wisdom and speaking truth into me. And so we made that change, probably about $200 Canadian, that I don't think any of us really ever like to do. But sometimes you just got to accept it to be able to get the experiences you want. And this was a special one because it was really, really close to my birthday. We do the flight up to Frankfurt, big deal, right? We're at a remote gate, a remote stand, and that's where the fun starts. And I can't remember if you ever had this experience before because we're chatting about it and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, we're still going to have to go in. And I'm like, I see a Porsche. I see a Porsche Cayenne.
I don't think I've ever done a remote stand at Frankfurt. And yes, we had the drive Porsche fly Lufthansa moment, right?
Yeah. And it was just a very comfortable, for me, it was that moment where I started getting into the, now this is luxury. This is, we've made it. We've made it to this point, part of the trip.
You're being pampered.
You're sitting in this perfectly temperate Porsche Cayenne. You're driving airside. You're getting to see all these beautiful aircraft. You're literally driving under tails of A340s and other planes. And you just have just a completely different perspective. At least I did. And I just sort of, you know, I took the breath and I'm just like, I'm back in my happy place. And it was funny because she asks us where we're going. I'm like, we want to go to the Lufthansa First Class Terminal. And she's like, I know where we're going. She's like, I know exactly where I'm going to drop you off. And she drops us off. And it was, I don't know, 100. It was probably more than 100 feet. It was probably like a 2-minute walk from where she dropped us to being outside.
The closest walk I've ever had. Yeah, I've never had to walk that little to get to the exit of the terminal.
Exactly. And come to find out, you exit that door and where you know, now you're landside and you're right at the outside of the baggage claim landside part. And they now have a sign that shows you how to get to the Lufthansa First Class Terminal. I never remember that.
It wasn't there. It didn't used to be there.
Clearly the secret's out. That's why you can't get Lufthansa space anymore because there's signs everywhere saying the first class terminal is this way. It used to be like the secret handshake that you had to do with like Ben or Matthew Clint just to be able to get directions there. I joke. We make our way over. It was bonkers. I mean, they had that, 8 or 9 a.m. block of flights, bank of flights.
I think you mentioned it at the last episode too, but yeah, you'd never seen the first class terminal so full.
Yeah, never. So we did talk a lot about our terminal experience. All I will say is we went into that one and I was a bit of a drill sergeant. More so than ever before. And
a bit of a drill sergeant?
Like, I was like, okay, you got 10 minutes to do this. You got this, you get this, you get this. I don't know if you have time for a nap. You know, you're like, I just want to get one of those nap rooms and I'll just sleep for an hour. And I'm like, I don't know if we got time for that. We had some fun with that. The irony was, is like, I didn't do nearly the things that I usually do on one of those layovers, just because we ended up running into JT, which I think was much better for it. Right. Usually I try to do like a rum tasting because they have some really, really nice rums. And that just didn't work out this time. But instead, we had the chance to, this trip was really fun because we ran into people. Like, we ran into Jason, we ran into JT. I'm sure if we ended up pivoting elsewhere, because we originally were going to pivot from Frankfurt to Seoul via
Ho Chi Minh, I think.
Yeah, via, I keep on wanting to call it Saigon.
Well, that's the airport code.
Because the SGN. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we were originally going to pivot that way. And then it was just a real interesting.
Imagine how it would have been if we got there on the 8:30 flight.
Yeah, it would have been a completely different experience because we would have been like, there's not enough time to do everything we want.
Completely rushed. There wasn't. We barely had enough time to do cigar, schnitzel, champagne, and shower. That was it. You know, that's all the time you had.
Pretty much. Yeah. I think you just wrapped it up perfectly. The interesting thing on this was the flight we were on, Lufthansa 418. Historically, it is a 747-8 intercontinental, and it had been from the moment that Lufthansa started flying the 747s. I think the 8i was probably going to Dulles as probably one of the first, maybe not the first, but early on of 8i flights to the US. And so they downgraded it to a 340. They have one other flight, I think, from Frankfurt, and then they're flying the A380 from Munich.
It's a lot of lift to DC.
Yeah, there's a lot of lift to DC. And so I think they had to downgauge that 747-8i, which I think was a real big hit. You know, I've done the 340 twice this year in first class, and it's an all right aircraft. It's got something rather unique that you had to take a look at, but I think that's about where it ends.
What is it about like Lufthansa and interesting toilets?
I think we have an episode planned on Lufthansa's lavatory proclivities.
I think there's something about Germans and toilet culture or something. I don't know.
Oh, gosh. That might be a story for another time.
I might have just offended a lot of... Do we have any German listeners? I don't know. I think we've just offended all of them, but...
We may have, but who knows if we still do.
Or they might tell me like, yeah, there is... There is TK. There is. What really does distinguish this 8340-600, right? Other than it being a super long airplane, right? Because it's a long airplane from a length perspective. But what's interesting is there are no economy lavatories on the main flight deck. Are there, Trevor?
No. And having done that same really long walk that you did to check it out, it's just the weirdest thing because you're walking and you're walking and you're walking. And then finally, you're starting to get, you're past the wing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not all the way back, though. I mean, the plane keeps going for a while, but you do hit a staircase.
Well, and that was the weird thing for me, because the first time I went back, I see like this blocked out area on the left side of the middle seats, right, between the two aisles. And I'm on the right side of the aircraft, or I'm on the left side of the aircraft, right, if you're going backwards. And I totally missed it. And I get all the way to the back, and I'm like, where is it? And so like, I kind of do I did the full lap around the plane and I'm walking up and I'm like, oh, that's what that is.
Some of us are more observant than others. Some of us can actually see the staircase as they're walking down, but okay.
Well, you can't see the staircase. You just see the shell for where you're going down, like because there's the overhead over the staircase. And it jumped out as an anomaly to me, but I wanted to go all the way back anyway.
It doesn't look like a normal bulkhead. You know, it does have a different shape.
Yeah. Yeah. It almost looks like there's an armadillo, like a huge Lufthansa colored armadillo in the economy seats.
That's not what I would characterize it as, but okay. Some of us have different descriptive language than others, but all right. But there is in fact this staircase. And again, it is very strange. All these lavatories are in essentially the cargo hold area, right? Because they've created kind of this separate area where all the labs are, and they've moved all of them under the down one level from the main flight deck, basically. You have to walk down the staircase.
Yeah, it's almost like you're walking down into a little office area, the way it feels like, because it's got that normal kind of airline pristineness. And, you know, there's just doors everywhere.
Well, one of the economy flight attendants saw me, you know, taking photos, and he's like, hey, it's really cool, right? It's kind of like an A380, because, you know, he clearly knew that I was back here geeking out over this thing. He made some comments. But it is something interesting to see. And, you know, honestly, these 340s are probably not – I definitely think they're not going to be around as long as the 747-8s.
they were supposed to be retired. They retired them during the pandemic, and then they needed more capacity, and so they brought them back, which is probably why these seats are...
You probably thank Boeing for that a little bit, you know? This is probably very much related to not having any 777-9Xs.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but you can tell these aircraft are just tired.
Yes, yes. Worn. They are worn.
The leather furnishings and everything. It's
still luxurious, but you know, frayed. I know, like, one of the little compartments on my seat said inoperable. So
yeah, and it's just a shame to see a super premium product like Lufthansa First Class kind of looking so worn. And we had an interesting thing on that one. The purser, I think she told me, I assume she told you too, they were short-staffed. They didn't have...
She didn't tell me. She didn't say anything to me about it.
Yeah, so she says to me, she's like, so we didn't have the proper staffing here for first class cabin, whatever the gentleman's name was. He's like, so he volunteered. And I'm like, oh, you could just do that, huh? Hey, I'm in economy, but you know, you're looking for somebody for the first class cabin. Yeah. Hey, pick me.
Ian, coach, put me in. I'm ready.
Yeah. I mean, and the funniest part, I mean, this guy was just so, he was so down to earth. You know, he walks by, he's like, your glass looks like it needs to be refilled. Let's do that for you. You know, just like a little bit of it's like the German translation. But I mean, he was just so sincere. And he was like, he's giving me a healthy portion of caviar. And he's like, yeah, I don't usually get to do this. So, you know, hope we're going to do the best we can here. And hopefully I'm not giving you too much, or, you know, hopefully you're satisfied. And will you be having a nice shot of Grey Goose vodka with the caviar? And like, just his mannerisms were humorous and were sincere. And it was just such a cool, it was kind of cool to have somebody that was.
It was very, very unarming, you know, disarming. He was very, he exuded like kind of like he wanted you to feel comfortable and he wanted you to feel casual. Like it was that kind of experience, at least for me, you know. And he was very, very excellent, excellent flight attendant. Really wanted you to be at ease and enjoy the flight, enjoy the food service, enjoy everything. And, you know, I think I might have mentioned it with the JT episode that we had previously, but yeah, definitely in the tradition of surprisingly friendly and warm German flight attendants in Lufthansa First. Not what you would expect. I mean, you know, you expect this kind of, like, you would expect, you know, given maybe a stereotype, kind of a brusque European kind of caliber of service. That's not what you get. You get a very warm, it's like, welcome to my house. Let me make you as comfortable as possible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, you know, you mentioned previously about wine tasting. As we're talking through this, I did the white wine tasting. I did the Rieslings and both of the Rieslings, the dessert wine and the regular wine. And he was like, oh, and if you're going to try the Riesling, not the dessert one, you should try this one as well. And this is a different barrel. And even though he hadn't done the first class, or at least he said he hadn't done, and maybe he had done like the kitchen piece and not the service or whatever, but he was familiar with things.
He was well briefed on the menu. Like he knew the products that were on the menu. He was absolutely encouraging you to enjoy them and explore them. He definitely knew where everything was from, was providing that level of detail as he was serving. Great experience. I think it really made up for any shortcomings like that we saw from, you know, maybe a little bit of wear and tear. But I mean, like everything else was stellar just because service was amazing. And I thought the food was pretty good. You know, the food and wine selection, I thought, as usual. I don't usually get disappointed on Lufthansa, and of course, caviar doesn't hurt, but I thought I had a great meal.
Yeah, I didn't feel like they were as aggressive in the random, like, guinea fowl. I think guinea fowl was actually on the menu, but...
I think it was on there. I don't think either of us ordered it.
No. I mean, but, like, I've had some really random things in the past, and I feel like they were a little bit more conservative compared to what I'd seen in the past on some of those dishes. But it could be that, you know, as you get into the holidays where they usually have, like, the kind of the hen and some of the other fowl kind of non-standard meats. I could be wrong, but I think that's my recollection that they usually, you know, the colder times, I always remember different types of proteins. Yeah. Overall, I think that experience was actually really, really nice. They used to do arrival services. They haven't done them since the pandemic. I keep on hoping every time that they're bringing them back because they used to do like a little minibus. You'd walk out, and in Dulles, you have to take a
mobile lounge.
Yeah. And what you'd do is instead of that, you'd just like hang a hard right and they walk you right down to like a little Mercedes Sprinter van, pop everything in. Then you go in this little secret back door at the customs hall and you're right at the global entries. They haven't done that, unfortunately, since the pandemic. Like I said, I keep on hoping they come back because that mobile lounge is just like you're in luxury and then you're a sardine can. You're in a sardine can.
Well, you know, we took some of that into our own hands, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
So a couple of parts to that, right? So the one thing that I used to do with the mobile lounges, and I know you're getting to something else.
You want to talk about the mobile lounges a little bit.
Hear me out for a second. So the old game used to be you go into these mobile lounges, and if anybody hasn't flown through Dulles, so there are these buses that rise up to the terminal. And the reason is because they used to actually bring these buses right to the planes. So like they were literally mobile lounges that were the boarding lounge.
I can go even to more depth. You know, these were part of the master plan of Eero Saarinen. When he designed Dulles Airport in the 1950s, he actually did these studies about, you know, how far people walked and everything. And that was the design of Dulles was always intended that you would always have all these mobile lounges in one head house, right? And all the airlines would be at remote stands so that there wouldn't be all this walking, you know, there would just be, you'd walk to the mobile lounge and then you'd be taken to the mobile lounge directly to whatever plane was out on the tarmac. And there wouldn't be all of these walkways and everything. That was part of the master plan of Dulles Airport by the noted Finnish architect, Eero Saarinen, who also is known for the St. Louis Arch and the TWA Flight Center.
And I don't know if he's still alive, but if he isn't, he's probably rolling around in his grave for that.
No, he actually died before he could see Dulles Airport completed.
Well, probably for his benefit, so that he doesn't see those horrible temporary C and D gates. But appreciate that history there. So anyway, the old game that everybody likes to play is there's two aisles, and then just off the aisles on the outbound, the window side, are areas for like wheelchairs and stuff, and then they start benches about halfway through. And so what all the people that kind of do this regularly, they duck right into the wheelchair area and then just hope that there's no wheelchairs that they're going to be displaced. So some years ago, after the pandemic waned, I came to the conclusion that all of that crunching like a sardine does not save me anything. And in fact, you're just a little bit more comfortable if you walk all the way in and then just have a seat, and it takes like two more minutes and then you're less frustrated. Because I've been yelled at by those drivers so many times, as well as, you know, everybody else on there. We're not going until we get, you know, we're getting the entire aircraft in here, sort of thing. And nobody wants to move. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to be part of it. And so that's one thing. As we're sitting comfortably at the back of the bus, so to speak, the only time I actually, you know, welcome and embrace the back of the bus.
we know you're a man of the people and love mass transit.
I had to be a man of the people somewhere. So here we are, we're sitting there, we've got the Global Entry app open, and the last time I had been through, a week before or a week and a half before, the customs guy's like, yeah, you really want to be doing that because you're going to save a whole lot more time that way. And so here we are, we're doing that Global Entry app. You can go through the whole process, and then they just have your name when you make it to the counter, and it's such a faster experience. The only thing is that the signage, because Dulles, I guess, is one of the folks that are doing the pilots. They always do pilots. So like we get like a new machine every 6 months, it feels like, for the customs area. We've gone from like the blue ones to these black machines to now there's like this one freestanding machine that's just like perpetually on, and everybody just kind of walks through like in a single file line, and it apparently processes things. And so you've got the mobile app now. You just have to follow the signage to be able to know that you can cut lines, which is really nice, because we were in a line and somebody was like, no, you can't go there. And then like one of the nice little ombudsmans or liaisons or helpers is like, mobile app here. And we're like, okay, we're going. And we were, you know, from that moment, we didn't actually stop walking, I think, until we got out to the Uber.
And this was like the depth of the bank of flights from Europe, I think, you know, because this was what, 4 p.m. or something. And that arrivals hall immigration was jam-packed.
Oh my God. Yeah. Thousands and thousands of people.
There was a sea of humanity in the stanchions in the regular line. So, and even Global Entry, you know, there was a line at least 20 deep, maybe of people waiting to go through the main Global Entry channel or something like that.
Yeah. They have that little snake around that's like three or four laps. And that was completely full. Like we were in the overflow, which is where we originally stood until we knew we could go through that mobile app line. I jokingly say that that's the conga line, right? So it starts about 2:30 p.m. into Dulles, and it doesn't really stop until probably, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock. And if you look at like a FlightAware or FlightRadar 24, you just see all these aircraft, you know, just kind of all in this conga line across the Atlantic, the North Atlantic.
For our listeners, I think it really does make sense for you to take a little bit of time, take a few minutes. And quite honestly, it's enough time even just do it on your, you know, taxi to the terminal from your flight. And because that's when I did mine, I downloaded my, because I only remembered, I think, when we were kind of landing. I was like, oh yeah, I need to get this global entry app and I need to register it. And the hardest part was just finding my pass ID because I had to log back into the ttp.gov site to find out what the hell my pass ID was because I don't have that global entry card on me most of the time. And once you have that, I mean, the app's not hard and it probably did save us a good 10 minutes at least, I would think.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt.
Yeah. So probably worth a download, considering. Could save yourself some good time, especially if you happen to fly at one of these like peak times where there's a big bank of flights from Europe or something, and you know that that immigration hall is going to be busy.
So I'll just say one other thing on that note, and this is more a tech thing than a travel thing. I've observed that if I don't use an app regularly enough, my iPhone, and I don't know if there's just some new setting with the different pushes of iOS versions, but my iPhone like kind of goes to this little cloud with a down arrow.
It archives the app.
Yeah, it archives it. So you've essentially got to re-download it. And so for me, I just try to be mindful of that. And in this case, I had to do that. So I didn't, you know, so I was essentially re-downloading it on the taxi. In the event that you're someplace where you don't have a great connectivity, or if you're have some other issue, just be mindful maybe on your way to the airport or in the lounge or that sort of thing, just to be able to make sure you've got that app.
I will go back to a second for the flight, for Lufthansa for a flight. They did give us vouchers for free Wi-Fi on that flight, but I found that Wi-Fi pretty useless. You know, I could maybe text message on it, but beyond that, it was bad. So it's definitely not Starlink or any newer technology, at least on the 340s.
No, it's Skynet. No, it's literally called Skynet. I'm just thankful that Lufthansa has not embraced AI, because AI plus Skynet would make me kind of nervous.
Yeah, I don't think I was able to download any apps on it. I'm pretty sure I had to wait till we were on the ground and I could get onto the normal cell phone network before I was able to download my app. So anyway.
So Tom, I think we went pretty long here. I think we've said this a lot of times. This is more a conversation that we just probably would have had over a drink. And in fact, I think we were drinking because of the Lufthansa first class drinking game.
Of course we were.
Sometimes we're much more focused when we have other guests. Sometimes it's a little bit more stream of consciousness and a little bit more casual. Hopefully folks enjoy that.
Well, those of us that listen to us, you know, to go to sleep, you got your money's worth today. So.
I love that. I love that. I think it's so cool. Like, I mean, I want to be a useful podcast for everyone. And if we're able to help somebody get to slumber, I know I don't sleep very well. So, I mean, that's a gift right there. That's our gift.
I'm sure we're pretty cheap white noise. Is this white noise? I don't know. I guess it could be for some people.
I will take your word for it. There is a white noise app that has airplane sounds that I find that I use, and that's helpful. Okay. Yeah. Way many tangents, but I just wanted to put a plug in before we close out that Ed Pizzarello of Pizza in Motion, Gene of Le Chic Geek, and I, and you, you're not going to be around, I think, on the 9th of December.
I am aspiring to be there.
Okay. Well, here's hoping. So 9 December in Arlington, Virginia, just outside of DC. It's probably about, I don't know, probably 5-6 stops on the metro, or maybe more than that because you got to go through the city.
Definitely metro accessible. Very metro accessible.
Very metro accessible. Bar Bao, B-A-R, like a bar, B-A-O, in Arlington, Virginia, right there on Clarendon Road. On December 9th, we're going to have some Marines join us. We're going to have some drinks. We're going to talk travel. Just bring a toy. We do this Toys for Tots happy hour every year.
It's a great tradition.
Yeah, it's a great tradition that we like to do. We started it ages ago, as I think I mentioned, or as we mentioned with Richard Kerr on that episode. Other than a brief hiatus during the pandemic, we've been steadfast in pulling together a nice happy hour for a lot of folks to chat, travel, share stories and everything, and also do good in bringing some joy to some children's Christmases.
And you can meet us in person if you want. That's another benefit, I guess.
Absolutely.
Or is it? Is it not a benefit?
It's always nice to put a face to a voice. Right? Put a face to a voice. I love that phrase. I can't remember which listener had coined that, but I just love that phrase because it's so true. I mean, here we are. We're sitting in your phone or whatever your podcast app or where you're accompanying, we accompany you on your commute, but you don't really see us unless, you know, you look at the one YouTube episode that we've done. So it's nice to put a face to a voice. We hope you'll join us.
Unfortunately, we've now made this episode slightly not evergreen. So it is December 9th, 2024 in Arlington, Virginia, in case you're listening to us in the way, way future for some reason. But yeah, we really are looking forward to seeing some listeners. And it's a great, great charity event as well. You know, we generally get a very good haul of toys for the Marines and for Toys for Tots. So it's kind of a way to socialize, have some great miles and points conversation, meet some great friends and other people in the hobby, and also do some good, basically getting some toys to those who need it.
And some holiday cheer.
And some holiday cheer, yep. So please come by. I know we're very much looking forward to seeing many of you there, and it's always a good time.
Absolutely. The one thing I will also put a plug in, so Kohl's usually does this cool Black Friday where you get like double the Kohl's cash. What my strategy usually is for anybody that's trying to think, how am I going to get the, you know, the most bang for the buck for being able to find toys for donation, I'll usually buy the toys then. And then what you get is you get the toys at that time, and then you can earn, you know, that double Kohl's cash, and then maybe you can even buy some more. That's what I typically do. Not saying that everybody should, but the reason that we have it after Black Friday is so that folks have the opportunity to kind of take advantage of some of those Black Friday sales. Sometimes that's a way that everybody gets a little bit of value and do good.
Maybe get some Kohl's gift cards at your local grocery store at 4X or more from a multiple standpoint. Maybe go through a shopping portal and get a couple X there too. Maybe do an in-store pickup and get some more Kohl's cash.
And yes to you rewards too.
And yes to you awards as well. Yep. Probably a couple things you could do there if you really want, if you really felt like maximizing.
And that's what we're here about. That's what we're here for.
Yes.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milanomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.